Oh, I know what else Walt Whitman said in that poem. He was talking about, I loaf and loiter.
Really?
He put in a really nice plug for loitering.
Nice.
Yep.
Walt Whitman loafs and loiters.
Yep.
Good.
Patron saint.
Yeah, patron saint.
A patron poet. No, Pat's our patron poet. Seems kind of permeated in the modern culture that we're fucked up and we're not doing it right.
Yeah.
And it's really a poor way to enjoy what's given you. We're not any more or less fucked up than any other.
Yeah, you couldn't prove it either way.
On earth, can't I? Like, to live with that, oh shit, we're really, like, we're just so much more fucked up than we've ever been, and the hammer's about to fall. That's like such a mind fuck.
Yeah.
It will steal every minute that you actually have here. All the good minutes that you have here, which there's plenty of.
Yeah, I think you look back your history, there's pretty much no time that was calmer or better than this. Like, what point is in the pinnacle age that people are thinking back? Like, I just don't get what people think their goal is.
50s.
Well, I think about the 50s. When did the Cuban Missile Crisis happen in the Cold War? We were figuring, mutual assured destruction.
Yeah. And that's like maybe even like a short respite gained after like the most horrific world war ever. So it's like, oh, this is great. But like, was it really anything more than just a contrast of like, and all that destruction.
Yeah. I always think, like, I can say, things are fine, everything's good, and it's like, everything. And then it's like, and I'm living right next to possibly people that, like, shit is totally hitting the fan in their life, whether it's in a big way or a little way. So who's to say it? There is no absolute. I mean, there were people having good days and bad days in a regular life when Hitler was shoveling people into ovens, like lots of people. And you can't tell. And it isn't for us to tell, Seems pretty good to me. Until I have a shitstorm in the head for no good reason. Then it's time to go to sleep. Get a handle on it.
The hallucination of time is always at your beck and call.
From as long as I can remember, I've been fucked up in the head over time. Like, feeling like it's just running out. Or I'm not doing something right with it. Or when I was in my 20s, I remember like freaking out over never having enough time.
Well, time is self. You can't have a riveting story to tell yourself about yourself without that companion instantaneous, right, ballooning in time, context, and implication. Thought is referential. That thought occurs, you could say, is actual, even though nobody knows what thought is. But what thought refers to is always referential. Which is time. We don't know ourselves in silence. Silence is non-referential. We know ourselves, or you know, we self-antagonize through reference. We operate kind of habitually through various forms or suggestions of what's going to happen to me, or what's the future consequence of what it is I imagine that's happening now, and all kinds of variations on a theme. And that is all time and self. We've managed to anthropomorphize immediacy as self, as body, mind, space, time, durably occurring, that floods into implication. And that implication can be raced toward, if it's, you know, the best milkshake you've ever had, or avoided like the plague if it's like your mother, right? Or whatever metaphor is working for you at that moment. I mean, it could be the next business day, right? Yeah. So that you know, engine of hysteria has us more or less enthralled.
Makes a day go by.
appears to. Yeah, sure. It's a way to fill a day. Yeah.
A snippet today of what would it be like if I just assumed everything would be okay all the time.
That sounds nice.
Like sort of bulletproof, like do whatever and just...
Yeah.
It was like a little flash of, I could live like that.
Oh, sure. If not you, who?
Mm-hmm. I spent some time today wondering that the like main problems I was worried about now were solved. What new problems would I find to be worried about?
Yeah, you may as well future pace new problems. Well done.
Yep. Don't use up your current problems. You just have to find new ones. They might be worse. I love those data points of having just skipped the worry and skipped the buying into the problems, and then you get to the other side, it's like, oh yeah, I'm glad I skipped that, because it wasn't valid anyway.
Yeah, if we're not... relying on circumstances or events or how things need to turn out, then the genie of self and time goes back into the bottle.
That's pointing to how free you want to be.
Yes.
Mofo genie can get really big and you're relying on it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, this genie is a big genie. It's not like a three-wish problem. There's no limit on the wish.
Okay. I mean,
right? That's how we're functioning. It's a limitless genie. You'd be better off if it was three wishes. You could be done with it. Go back into the bottle, throw it into the ocean. But this one's like, what else you got? What else you got? What else you got? What else you want? And you're like, well, how about this? Okay. How about not? Okay. How about more of? How about less of? Okay. How about another day in paradise? You're in. You're on. They're edible.
I'm kind of nasty. The pea onion in your boat.
To have something to resolve condemns you to time. To have something to feel better about or feel better toward or have it or someone feel better about or toward you condemns you to time. You may not mind that so much.
Most people do.
And a lot of us could say, oh, you know, I don't mind it. And most likely they'd be lying. But it's simply because they haven't, wandered deeply through the texture of how consciousness is appearing and what the implications of that are for, quote, themselves. I mean, it's kind of scary as hell to have your sanguine life view be challenged at such a fundamental place of belief that you will avoid that at all costs. Smart move.
I don't really know how to communicate it, but I know at one point when I was in Michigan with my nephew and his wife, I got like a little snippet of, holy shit, there's big ass pieces of me that I'm no longer here. Like I sort of got
of yourself.
The, yeah.
Yeah.
I just got how little of me there was, and I think it was in, maybe it was something like kind of in comparison to who I was with, because they, you know, they believe in themselves.
Right? Yes.
And devout Catholics and blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
I'm like, I just got a little view of there is not much of me left. I don't know. It was a weird little snippet that I can't even describe what it was.
Yeah. It's a good contrast, you know, if you're around people that are functionally inhabited.
Totally inhabited.
Then you can kind of get a kick out of them with a little bit of, you know, space. Mm-hmm. And get a sense that you're less so, less inhabited.
I feel sometimes like I'm a universal donor. It's like I don't have an opinion. You're going to have a hard time arguing with me about anything because I don't... you're not going to get any traction on what I believe or don't believe because I can't invest in it that heavy.
Yeah.
If there's anything I do invest in or believe in, it's more like there's nothing to believe in.
Or shoes.
Oh, yeah, I do like shoes.
Yeah.
What's your religion? Shoes.
The accumulation of fine footwear. Well, it's the great hormonal rush of, well, you could argue any species that lives its life as frantically and freely as it possibly can and copulates with abandon and makes more of itself. And you feel maybe comforted, one feels comforted by, you know, the great tide of humanity going somewhere. For Elon Musk, it's planet Mars. For what's his name? Wheelchair guy.
Hawking.
David Hawking.
Stephen
Hawking. It's a thousand years to go interstellar, right? For David Icke, it's, you know, down with lizards. Yeah.
When you really get that we're going absolutely nowhere and there's no place to go, there is a quote, it's by the voice of the guy that plays the main character in Mad Men. He must have played in The Matrix or something, and I think it's a quote from The Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something to the effect of, you're not going anywhere. There's nowhere to get to. This doesn't mean anything, and the universe doesn't care.
Wow.
Something along those lines. Yeah. And that is such the antithesis of just about everybody here. You got to hold on to, I'm going somewhere. We're getting somewhere. We got to fix up our act and clean up the environment and get politics in line. Like, it's that this doesn't mean anything and it's going nowhere. And, like, the universe doesn't give a shit. And even Walt Whitman was talking about it. He was like, in his beautiful prose, he was like, I love the, you know, suicide sprawled on the floor as much as the, you know, newborn babe as much as the, you know, limb that's cut off and lands light with a thud in the bucket at the end of the table. Yeah. It's like neutral. It doesn't care. And we so want to believe in a God that really cares, that has our best interest in mind, and that we can get someplace and get something, and that this means something.
Well, yeah, that's the tapestry of time, self and time.
Take that rattle away from some babies, and they will fucking scream.
Oh.
Like, they'll cut your head off.
Yeah.
I think it hits close because it rings true. How can it mean anything?
Well, what's fun, let's say, within the field of, you know, philosophical or even spiritual contemplative endeavor, one can find themselves in an endless loop of swapping meaning. It used to mean this, but now it means that. And that it means that, then mean that it means this. And it used to mean this, but now it means that. So you end up, let's say, in a, you know, a kind of a maturing or education process by refining what is meant by things taught, spoken, or by your own experience. So you're always swapping, right? Meaning for meaning, looking for a greater, let's say, joy or fulfillment or sublimity from the movement of meaning and implication or, you know, revelation or aha moments. And then there's, like, not that. Where the impulse or the reflex for swapping meaning into finer, more joyful, more satisfying meaning, just that just shuts down.
You can't. This isn't about, okay, now we're going to be the group that defines ourselves by not having any meaning, because you've just added meaning to the, as the one that doesn't have any meaning. Because that has some perks. I can, like, be above other people, scoff at their silly little meaning. And
well, I hope every group gets that enjoyment. Yeah, they should, right? Yeah. I mean, there's no point having a group unless you can scoff at groups that are less intelligent or having less fun than you are. Right? Yeah.
That was the Mukti segment that I came across.
Uh-huh.
Funny, this is all intertwined. Well,
what was Mukti saying?
She started out with her, you know, charming, calming voice talking about when she and Adya were setting up their sangha and this and that.
Uh-huh.
That every group that she'd ever been in, she was kind of reflected on. Many of the groups kind of had this subtle or not so subtle sense of, well, ours is the best way, and we really have it. And what she had hoped that the Open Gate Saga would provide as a, like an open door for conversation across all groups. And,
no
you
way.
Know, the peace and brown rice kind of horseshit.
Yeah.
It was that kind of thing.
Right.
That's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, though, thinking of, like, your group's the best. I mean, like, that's why you're there. If it wasn't, like, you'd be somewhere else. Like,
yeah, it's best for you at the time. Yeah, it's best for you at the time. That's, you know.
But I guess the problem is that everyone else thinks that, like, oh no, if that person came over this group, they'd be much better served. They should join me here.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of this group. There's no, like, shiny eyed, like, let's recruit and make sure everybody likes us. We don't give a shit. That's the best part.
Well, that's why it's, you know, it's good to make fun of newcomers.
I don't want to stay.
Especially when I go running out the door.
Yeah. You sure you want to hang out here?
They don't show up much anymore. We don't have that problem.
Yeah, it's the problem.
Jeff makes them cry.
We just had two new ones on Friday, though. Sort of new.
Where'd they come from?
The one guy, Ken, I think he's from next door, right? And then, whose friend is that lady, Anne? She's friends with
Annie. Dave.
Dave.
Oh, she's dating Dave. So Ken from next door that started the whole thing next door came back?
Two Fridays ago.
Was it two Fridays ago?
Oh. Yeah.
Mm. Time goes quickly.
It does.
What time?
Once the, you know, call it the vector of yourself, interest and attention, a place to go, a thing to feel, an insight to have, and then how to put any of that to utilitarian good use so that you can attract a partner, repair a friendship, get a new job, right? Do anything, right? That's it. I mean, you're back in the loop and the frustration of becoming.
Well, it certainly appears that the vector of yourself does stuff. It appears that that's the way things come to you.
You could make that conclusion or accusation with some degree of confidence, looking, you know, let's say back. And then you can also see the frivolity of that conclusion when you witness that you're merely arising presently. And that all the credit that you might wish to take for participating in the most marvelous life that you've carved out thus far.
All to my doom.
Yeah. Is just not what's happened. Yeah. So yeah, you can take credit for the past from the curious confidence of the present. And nobody can really argue with you, except that there is no past. There's nothing to take credit for. But knock yourself out anyway. You're only ever arising, and even that's not true, in the present as, right, an expressive presence, a hallucinatory claiming owner, actor, supplicator, and receiver of whatever you care to imagine right now. You can't find, let's say, sensation from the past. You can associate present discomfort with unacceptable events of your so-called past. That you can do. But the stitching together of how you may be experiencing things or feeling things now, having something solidly to do with events and circumstances of the past, even that is hallucinatorily expressed as part of the matrix of who you take yourself to be at present. We become comfortable, desirous of reinventing ourselves through 1,000 different variants. Craving is a way to reinvent yourself. Refusal is a way to reinvent yourself. Aligning yourself with events in the so-called past that you can take credit for is a way of reinventing yourself. Having a plan and a to-do and a regret, something to look forward to, something not to look forward to, a spiritual opinion, a political opinion, the commitment to be a progressive activist, the commitment to do hate speech in a public forum. It's just arising presently with this incredible force of hubris that says, you know, I am this, I am that, I do this, I do that, I choose this, I choose that. And if you're a successful person, whether in, you know, business, life, love, money, influence, right, politics, you name it, then the price that you pay for that success is remarkably high, and you have no idea that you're paying that price because now you're so happily invested in the successes that you can credit yourself with making or enjoying, you would never, ever dare give them up. So you become embroiled and enrolled in the fabrication of a world that is treating you to what appears to be creature, celebrity, financial, reputational, right? Performance, sports, success. And you become an unwitting product of that. Whatever you own, owns you.
I would contend, though, that most people, no matter how much, quote, success they have, they end up kind of like, they get that it's hollow, that it's not really filling them up. That, quote, most men lead lives of quiet desperation.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that's what it's nice for someone like me that has nothing to show for anything at all to say about somebody else, so I can feel a little bit better about myself. It's a handy accusation. Really. Well, I mean, you know, the media, the TV, you know, the celebrity, the this, the that, business persons, the Secretary of State, you know, all Trump's cabinet members. These are people that are, you know, they are frothing with incredible success, being at, you know, the top of their game in a white supremacist, climate-denying, fascistic cabinet that is making it appear to the idiots that that's a winning strategy for the country or the democracy or the world at large. They're loaded to the gills with success.
But I would contend that on a personal basis, if you could really get something honest from them.
You will never get that from them.
Most people you don't. But you get under the surface with other people that are more honest than you get. No matter how, quote, successful you are, there's usually a... there's a hole there that doesn't ever get filled by this place.
The myth of other people can lend to agreement and disagreement about what you might find were you to interview these so-called other people. What's, of course, key is, you know, the hallucinogenics that you're taking.
Desperation that drives you.
That's right. That's right. Somebody else's desperation just doesn't mean that much to you. Hidden or, you know, copped to. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get how Republicans don't turn Democrats into libertarians. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, people get into power and do shit that makes them mad, but then they're more happy to, like, build another, like, stronger layer of government on top of that in order that they may these new government officials may exercise these new powers to carry out their will, as if like someone you disagree with will never get into power and use those powers against you. Like, I just it doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
Yeah.
It's funny though what power really does to like the human mind. I was reading some profile on whatever the head guy at the World Bank of Scotland, maybe.
Yes.
We got in there and became like wildly successful and became like crazier in proportion to how successful he was. And they said like he would spend like hours like trying to get the place setting right on his desk.
Oh.
And he would like have all these people like bringing in different stuff with different shades of colors trying to get it exactly right. And just going like,
oh boy.
Crazy.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's when we, like, start, you know, you get that much feedback from the world that, like, what you're doing is correct, and you're taking all these risks, and it's always paying off, and you just begin to think that, like,
yeah,
you know, whatever you have going on in here really has some relationship to the external world, if you want to call it that, and then...
Like, yeah. Child stars and...
Yeah, sure, exactly like that.
There was a great Twilight Zone episode of a kind of a petty criminal wise guy who was always scamming people and gambling and womanizing and doing all this stuff, and he was just a really no good kind of badass, you know. So he ends up in what he thinks is a heaven realm where every woman wants to dance with him, and he has sumptuous meals at his beck and call, and he plays craps and wins every time. It's like what was that funny movie that was black and white and then went to color with Reese Witherspoon? Ville, something Ville.
Happyville or Happy Valley. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
Right.
So
there were Pleasantville. Remember there was a scene where the basketball team was just going swoosh, 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 swoosh. So this wise guy ends up in this, what he thinks is, you know, but then he sees that there's no contrast.
Yeah, I was going to say it gets boring real quick.
And then he realizes that he's in an actual hell realm and gets all flipped out. And the companion, some companion of his that's basically kind of behaving as his butler, can I get you this, can I get you that, he starts going mad when he sees there's no contrast, there's no way to lose, there's no challenge anymore, there's no one to scam, everything is, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So he gets a gun and he starts getting all pissed off and he starts shooting the butler and the bullets just go right through the guy and he says, what is this? Right? The butler turns out to be our, you know, dear friend Satan. Right? Yeah. And that's how it ends, with the revelation that, you know, he's in hell. You're like, oh. So similar with our, you know, high-ranking banking official that ends up in hell and just collapses and starts placing things in meticulous. That's how you could say, you know, what we might call evil, which I like to call evil, these agendas that we're seeing, that we've always seen, whether in the current political milieu or everything leading up to it since God knows when, you know, this insatiable, right, pursuit of power and influence and policy to have one's will be done, to create the so-called, you know, heaven realm of absolute success or absolute security. And it's a hell realm. So it's actually self-consuming. There's a lot of blood in the streets, but you could say any time that these waves of manifest destiny, violent manifest destiny has occurred in this idiot, you know, species, they don't go out of steam because good overcame them. They all go out of steam because they're self-consuming. They just burn up. They burn out. And then we could say, no, it's because the good guys came in there, you know, and da 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 da. No, that's not what happened.
Love trumps hate.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all want to believe that.
Well, too, I think, is that, like, it's not like a... It's a major consequence that, like, the freest people are the most productive and provide the most taxes. So you see, like, between, like, the United States and North Korea,
yeah,
like, the, quote, good guys for your country, like, the United States is always going to win that. So, like, there is, like, some, you know, balance of power there, which works out sort of like in an opposite way. It's like the people who give them the least freedom become the most powerful, but like the people who are the most repressive are the least powerful. So it's sort of like, I don't know, at least balances out to some degree where we're not, you know.
So far.
Living in abject terror all
yeah,
the time.
So far, because, at least. So far, because there's still 7-point-something billion of us, you know, whether growing or declining or leveling is anybody's guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could say we've made it this far.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, to reject accumulation and to reject authority in oneself, to reject, you know, control, predictability, that's a different quality of, well, call it wisdom. It's a precursor to emptiness. Loaf and loiter. As a understandable to response to the miseries that we have suffered, we want the ending of those miseries. So we think that therefore we are ideally destination bound. And that, you know, driving force to be destination bound, to overcome or compensate for or heal or transcend the curious inventory of our personal miseries is not going to work. It's not going to be satisfactory. There's no destination. To expect to be free from, let's say, misfortune, right? You become adhered to misfortune. You become the product of anything that you either refuse or aspire to. That's not freedom. That's being bound in time. What you really want, just to be all puffy and presumptuous about it, is a radical departure from continuity. Which can suggest a radical relationship with the presence of novelty. And discovering yourself as the presence of novelty makes all of your previous spiritual and secular agendas moot. Because you're out of context.
Oh, yeah, last week was the other place you went to.
The old Buttonwood Grill.
Yeah, I didn't notice on the invite it was 5:30, so I like, went off work at like 6, went home, and I was like, oh, I'm already an hour late. Never mind.
Yeah.
And how was that place, though?
Fine. Yeah, nice. Sure. Yeah, we had there was a big table. Only 4 of us showed up, but okay. There was a big table, and they would have been happy if we stayed, you know, longer.
I thought
longer.
You were going to the show afterwards.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Have you ever read any Lawrence Wright?
No.
Do you know who he is? He's a pretty famous journalist.
No.
He had written about a number of things, but in the past he had written about the Satanism craze that went on, I think, in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
where there was like a number of people who were having repressed memories returned to them, where they were like abused or this or that, and then he did some research into it, and essentially he thought what was going on was almost a mass hypnosis from like the current country or globe's milieu, like that was putting these strange thoughts into all these people's heads.
Oh.
They found girls that would be claimed, like sisters claiming that like their father was like a secret like Satanist, and him having repressed memories like showing that like he was thinking that he was like programmed to be a Satanist and like molesting his daughters.
Whoa.
And they found that like none of the scars could be corroborated on them, and there was no physical evidence of any of this. But
yeah.
Everyone thought it was real. Like the dude turned himself in and like did serve like 18 years.
That's a fairly curious hysteria.
Yeah, and the daughters thought it happened. It was happening like, and even the cops investigating it thought it was real, but like they weren't sure what was going on.
Now Rupert Sheldrake would have a party with that one.
Yeah, I don't know who that is, but it sounds familiar, Rupert Sheldrake.
Morphic resonance, morphogenic field, right?
Well, if you get real literal about this, if there really isn't any past or future, everything is just appearing right here and now. That's all you really have. The past really is kind of fictional and can morph pretty damn easily.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You have a very malleable fractal harmonic it's easy to get swept up and away with mm-hmm. what is or what did happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we're so remarkably suggestible.
Certain like, people more than others, apparently.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, it's Super Bowl Sunday. Talk about being suggestible.
Yeah, it's
used. Right? So, I could see how, a Satan cult wouldn't be my favorite way to spend or pass time, but you can see how something could just click into the so-called collective unconscious and just mm-hmm. spin a yarn and enroll everybody in having been part of it. I mean, these hysterias go wave through the species all the time.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I had a roommate that was one of those guys.
What?
In the mid-90s.
And that he was like...
He told me the story that he was like locked in a box as a child and tortured because his parents were Satanists and all this stuff. And then I read the book about that.
And you realize that like maybe these people were just way too suggestible?
I don't know. To this day, I don't know. He seemed a little off, but.
Well, that's the thing. They didn't really believe it, the people who had these memories.
Yeah.
And then he said that, like, the reason that the cops, he thought the cops were so apt to believe these people is because they, you know, you're there as a cop and you're trying to, like, help people and figure things out. And then the victims would sort of portray themselves like, if you don't believe me, like, you're committing, like, these crimes against me again. And, like, they just, they're so enrolled with it that, like, you know, it's not like you catch someone lying. It's like you catch someone who really deeply believes that has all of the memories and everything, but physically not, like, less. I guess, you know, I'm sure sometimes this did happen, you know.
There's some people out there.
Yeah, but a lot of it, like, because they had said something like, I think the one guy said, like, oh, Satanists kill, like, 50,000 people a year. And he, like, looked at the murderers. He's like, yeah. He's like, what? He's like, there was only, like, 8,000 people murdered this year.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, this is, like, isn't lining up,
something,
you know.
Isn't that.
Yeah.
Well, people without birth certificates that just disappear. I think I used to be much more frightened by and intimidated by my own, you know, kind of suspicion that nobody really knew what the fuck was going on, and you couldn't get a meaningful consensus from anybody about how you felt or what your life experience was or whether, you know, counseling could be of any use to you. And I was just, you know, it's kind of like a devastating existential loneliness. Mm-hmm. You just can't get any consensus from anybody, you know, and you want to try to connect, and but you're so fucked up, and you don't know where to begin. And I, you know, I would just go, right? Prozac poster boy. And I think that, I might be speaking out of turn, but... I'm less intimidated by that now.
You groove on it now.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, cool.
Turn from the hell realm to, oh, this isn't too bad.
Yeah.
If it's completely unexplainable, unmanageable.
This is terrifying. I mean, we're in a you know, hypnotic plasma that won't obey any rules at all, and all the consensus that we seek just drips through our hands. You can't rely on any consensus that you have or that you're offering or that you're a part of. And yeah, it's terrifying. This is so liquid. So as a creature, as a human, you know, that needs love and care and community and tribe and belief and support and enemies and, you know, things to do and not do. If it's really as curiously liquid and there's so little consensus that can actually be derived from it, that can be quite unnerving.
Like as a young adult, when I suddenly realized that there were no adults.
Oh, God.
Everybody was just big kids faking it.
That's a bad day.
Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, what?
Yeah.
I thought I was going to get to a certain point and just know things.
Yeah.
Like how this works.
Right. Like, because all the adults appeared to be.
Yeah, still waiting.
Yeah. Well, look at us. We're like, we're fucking clueless.
I don't like
and
that,
and by now, or I think we're old enough where, for most people, we're the adults.
Yeah. Willing to admit it.
That's scary as shit. Fuck.
I had that same disillusionment with engineering. It was sort of like in my profession. It was supposed to be, there were answers, and there was, this is how it, and when I came to the conclusion, oh, fuck. Like, there is no one way ever. Yeah. It's just some arbitrary, and a lot of people still think that it's not so arbitrary. I can see how arbitrary it is.
Well, you can see the, you know, if we're tapping into something that's just for fun, I mean, you know, kind of a legitimate legitimate life challenge to have to cope with at some point, right? Mm-hmm. Then you can kind of get a feeling why there is such fundamentalism.
Well, yeah, it gives you the box to climb into.
Yeah, yeah, because of the terror of seeing that, you know, well, Islam is fake, right? Christianity's fake, right? Judaism is fake.
That's hate speech.
Yeah.
You're never speaking at Berkeley again.
I know. You know, Dzogchen is fake, right? Baha'i is fake.
Let's just go with capitalism.
Capitalism is fake. Yeah.
No fair.
You know. All of this, you know, supplication and violence and suppression and repression and conformist reality and enrollment and the shunning that accompanies it, you could kind of see that it's somehow, you know, connected, if there were such a thing, to just how fluid and liquid and unreliable this is. So we've managed to presume and then defend with honor and death and violence and perpetration, you know, genocidal perpetration on others, that our, you know, Aryan supremacy is real. Repeat. We're fucking crazy. I'm so looking forward to the Super Bowl game.
Who's playing?
The
Patriots?
The New England Patriots and the Atlanta. No, the Arizona. Atlanta. Who are the Falcons?
Atlanta.
Atlanta Falcons.
Okay.
The Atlanta Falcons. Two kick-ass teams that made it all the way to this point. It's going to be a good game.
I'm going to Dallas, Texas to watch it.
Are you? Mm-hmm. You're going to be in Texas?
At my sister's house.
All right, well, she's going to have it on, right?
Well, they're having a little party.
A Super Bowl party?
Yeah.
Far out. Yep. Well, here, Brooke, broadcast it on Zoom. I want to see it.
They said they were going to have chili.
Nice. I mean, chili and wings and chips.
Trip there and see my sister.
Good move.
Yeah. Oh, shit. What am I going to
do?
I can't watch the game.
You can't?
Why not?
I don't know how.
Oh.
I don't have TV.
Oh.
They don't play it on Netflix or Hulu, do they?
Just go to any local sports bar and you'll be surrounded by friends.
Sorry. I threw up my mouth.
Yeah. I just threw up in my own mouth. Oh, my God.
Sports bars. Ugh. Noisy. Gross.
We remanufacture the world and we remanufacture ourselves in or as the world through this, you know, near constant reinforcing of ideation and opinions and plans and context and content. That's how we reimagine it. We reimagine, literally, we reimagine the world and we reimagine ourselves in or as the world through the incredible flow, the hypnotic flow of association, metaphor, context, and implication, which is, our, in a sense, ourselves conjuring at least the consensus reality of, you know, one. We can't ever be sure that anyone else is participating in what we're promoting as is true or vital or useful or, you know, a moral, ethical, appropriate way, utilitarian way to live. Because everyone's doing it quite in a so-called individualistic manner, living in the bubble of their own hallucinatory prowess. So then, well, what is intimacy? What is it? And, you know, is it possible? Is intimacy, in the way that we can use that word, even possible, since we can't escape the boundary field of our own imaginary bubble, though we can interface, right, socially and physically and conversationally and nonverbally and in a thousand ways that we do interface, but we are all curiously living inside the, right, future field, imaginary field of our own bubble world. But we're more or less polite on the road. Stay to the right, use your blinker, obey the signs.
More or less.
You know?
So you go with the road rage thing.
Yeah. There's always exceptions.
Yeah. Indeed.
You go to the end of the line. You go as far as your imagination will take you.
Pretty far.
Very far. It'll last a lifetime, if not lifetimes. Oh, it's quite a radical departure then to, what would you say, occupy, which is not quite true, your present experience, which is also not quite true, free from the habit of reinventing yourself within a conformist reality of one. It's really extraordinarily intimate, and disruptively so. It doesn't have anything to do with your, you know, personality, winning or otherwise. It doesn't have anything to do with seeking attention. Convincing yourself of what's next, what's so important to you, what you'd live and die for. What if you turned out to be unspeakable vastness? What if you turned out to be the objectless vacuity of in which all creation occurs? You had no craving for a state. No craving could be in a state of a state. in a condition of a condition. No interest in any preferential accoutrements that punctuate your existence. You know, rather than, let's say, praying to the Buddha, you walked on the Buddha's head to beyond.
Springboard off his belly.
Yeah, do a double gainer off his belly. So you see, there's this part of the engine of craving is the moving through conditions, sensation, existence, imagination, projection, self-assessment, things to improve about oneself. And those are all imaginary. Those are, you could say, voluntary bindings that we're happy to have, because the the excruciating irritability of being unbound is too much. So I would trade that for being the product of something, anything. Just let me be the product of something. Fulfillment is for posers. Who, by virtue of their interest in being fulfilled, will never be anything but a poser. If you have an interest in being fulfilled, you're in trouble. You can only characterize what you think your present or past or hopefully future experience is through a curious, complex set of entangled lies. If you make anything of yourself at all, that's through a convenient or inconvenient tangled set of lies. Which would include the confidence that you're unfulfilled and the going rogue to become fulfilled. we become duped by paternalistic, chauvinistic, political hate speech, imagining that some kind of malignant narcissist as daddy figure will bring the nation back to a glory that it has lost along the way. Amen. Can I get a hell, an orange hallelujah?
Yeah, I don't get why like the companies are buying his promises. Like there's no guarantee that his regulation removal or tax breaks are going to last any longer than 4 years. It's not like another country like Puerto Rico where they guarantee your tax break or like a regulatory burden for like 30 years or 20 years or whatever. Mm. Like you spend 2 years building a factory here and then say he gets only one term or even two. And like you get like your factory produces for 4 years or 2 years or 6 years. Like, I don't know. It just seems like our system is beyond repair. But
Guy McPherson has it. He's the most optimistic.
I'm like, who's Guy McPherson? Oh, yeah, he's the guy who thinks we're all dead.
Dead in 15, if that long.
I thought it was 5 or something, right? Five
a little more than 5. 5 to 10, yeah. 10. He's the most optimistic. Build your factory here. Here's your factory right here. Yeah.
Has he put any more work out? You've been following him still, or
no? I don't think he's got. I don't think he's got much else to put down. Then.
Well, then you come up with a new model and say, "Oh, years passed, and now we can see that it's following." Like I said, or you know.
Or worse, yeah.
Or worse or better? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know how well his, you know, website materials and stuff are designed to do. You know, like the doomsday clock, right? Was it 5, then it's 7, then then now it's 2.5, it was at 3, and right? The atomic scientists are saying, oh man, we're, you know, it's 2.5. We're losing.
2.5 years?
No, it's a clock model. Yeah.
2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes to midnight.
Yeah.
Where midnight is, you know,
annihilation.
It's one or 100 other forms of annihilation. Yeah.
It's crazy how close we actually came with those Russian sub-commanders who got, like faulty or fake orders to, like, go ahead, like, run a nuclear attack, like, you know, fire all missiles at America, but they would, like, you know, I just can't believe that this is actually real. Like, I gotta double-check, verify, you know.
I think these events have happened many times, documented and undocumented.
Well, I didn't have any undocumented, but there was two.
Right.
At least from the Russians, where the quote bad guys on an individual level at least said, like, yeah, I can't sign off on destruction of everything, you know.
Yeah.
Going to blow up the world. Yeah. There was some sanity there.
Yeah.
Or maybe they just thought, look, one sub doesn't fire their missiles, not a big deal. The whole world's going down anyway without me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to be counted.
Yeah.
I want to be counted in heaven amongst those that contributed to the conflagration and the end of the species. Yeah, I think I'll pass.
I think you really could design a heaven realm, because all you have to do would be to implant the memory, like you went through all this struggle, and then like, bam, you like finally decide to bet all your money and like, you know, hit big, you know, plane crash or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, oh, you got turned down by 100 women, and then like, oh, finally, like, you know, the one who dreams wants to dance with you. I think it would be possible, at least.
Yeah. It's worth trying.
Or, okay, I'm planting and implanting memories. Pretending like you went through the struggle.
Well, you know, you have yourself as, you know, a willing laboratory.
And track that experiment.
Yeah, so you can, you know.
We'll know if it's successful. We'll tell you.
Do with yourself what you please, as long as you stay out of jail, right?
Not anybody else.
Yeah. for the longest time, we feel that we're, you know, nourished by discovery and metaphor and swapping one reality for the next, like a snake molts its skin. And even that adventurism has diminishing returns. There's a collapse or an implosion that occurs because the extroverted habit of swapping one reality for the next best reality and imagining that you're making some kind of progress, accumulating a more refined knowledge about the nature of reality, like Terence McKenna kind of got lost in that loop, as do many. You see that there's nothing there for you. You're not sated or nourished or satisfied by representation of any kind. Oh, see you around.
Yeah.
When do you leave?
At least Sunday, like 1. Then I come back Tuesday night.
Oh. Oh, I see. Oh, so you'll be there, you'll show up there pretty much in time for the game.
I will.
Okay.
The idea.
All right, far out. Well, maybe we'll see you tomorrow.
I won't see you tomorrow. I guess I'm not going
to. All right, then. We'll miss you. Or we'll just.
We'll be back.
Well, let us know where you're going, and maybe we'll go where you are.
Yeah, it's warmer. Take you to Texas. See you later.
All right, have a good trip. In a sense, we kind of insist that this remains thrilling for us. We want it to be thrilling, remain thrilling, optimally, maximally, more and better thrilling. But something else is going to happen, which is going to undermine that. And that shift in dimensionality or release from conceiving and perceiving it's a little bit anathema to human conformist reality. It's hard to arouse a crowd using a soapbox. So we remain in the self-fulfilling loop of craving and becoming for as long as that runs. And then it starts to break down. The loop of craving and becoming breaks down, and we're forced to become acquainted with something that's not referential. You're not swapping an old reality for a new one, you're leaving the gravitational field of reality entirely. It's nice to be taken. You know, if it were the Borg, we might put up a big fuss. You know? I'm not going to get assimilated by you. You know? But this other thing is not the fucking Borg. But it will assimilate you. And in this case, you won't mind relinquishing your will to it. Because rather than being a sacrifice of self that you would resist, well, I mean, it's unutterable.
I mean, the normal condition sort of is like a possession. It's like, go here, do this, you must do this. Like,
we are.
This feeling, get that feeling. Ah, you're just like,
oh. We are possessed. Yeah. Yeah. We are the demon zombie spawn. See, we want to be the seeker and the clever adventurer and the accumulator and finder and discoverer of great knowledge or great wisdom, right? Magical powers, be they healing or fortune telling or whatever, you know, the walking on water, call it what you will. This is not like that. You're taken. You're consumed, immolated, and you don't have a trophy to show. Not a one. The cessation of reference and referencing replaces a need or a wish for sensual and existential thrill seeking. With absolute erasure. That maybe we think we're interested in, but on, you know, second consideration, maybe not. Because I, despite my, you know, trials and tribulations and suffering and lack thereof, I I love being in the game. I'm fond of myself as the creature. I like putting on my red cape and my tights and going out there to be a better spiritual person. I want to be recognized by others, either through envy or some other means, to measure my accomplishments. Maybe I can monetize it. Or at least get my name on a set of cookware. Something like that. So this is antithetical to that.
Yeah, I remember my friend pretty recently complaining to me that he was bored. Like, I'd been getting bored, like, for months.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? Like, what do you mean bored? I'm like, you know, I'm doing this, trying to do this, like. And then, like, I thought, it was the first time it, like, really hit me that, like, getting, like, addicted to things so easily does have the upside of, like, sort of making your life interesting, so to speak. It's just, like, that pull, you know, with everyone. Answers to some degree or another, but it does make for an interesting ride.
Yeah.
And a lack of boredom.
It's good to have a lack of boredom. Well, you can see how the, you know, the engine of yourself, someone else is shoveling the coal.
Yeah, who knows where it's coming from?
Yeah, you're just. You're not shoveling the coal. You don't even have your hands on the shovel. So you're just running the engine of yourself according to some other, you know, karmic or curious vital tapestry or blueprint that's pushing you around in the way that it's pushing you around. So your craving and your appetite and your interest or your capacity for more subtle subtle inquiry or subtle contemplation is not up to you.
So where would then the human emotion of boredom fit on, like, a through a spiritual lens, if you will? Because that's like, I like never ever feel bored. Like, I,
that's a gift.
Sure, but then, so I'm saying, like, people that do feel bored, then it's like you, or what, don't have the, like, egoic pull to, like, do all this shit, or you're just.
I think it can show up in all kinds of ways.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, even people that are, let's say, activized with things to do, places to go, people to meet, plans to keep, plans to break, they could be bored too. Even in the midst of, you know, what appears to be circumstantial novelty.
So I guess maybe it's something that the environment isn't responding in the way that they think that it should.
Well, yes, the boredom could also be, if you're lucky, a sign of, you know, collapse. Right? That the engine of yourself running from one superficial novelty to the next is breaking down, running out of steam. You know, the coal bin is starting to get empty. And that may feel like boredom. It may feel like despair. It may feel unwieldy and intimidating in so many ways. But, you know, in some cases you could say you're being invited into a more subtle realm. You're being invited to be taken. And you're capacity to derive nourishment from the circumstantial world is collapsing, you really don't know what to do with yourself because you haven't yet, you know, stumbled into a deeper appreciation of, you know, the companion reality that's not dependent upon appointments and circumstances. Or it could just be another reason to go back to drinking after, you know, a 5-year run of some hard-won sobriety. Yeah, someone could just have filled the coal bin back up.
One more round.
and you're ready for another round. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's all I got. Thanks for joining us at home. Hope you had as much fun as we did. Good night.